Welcome to the MMA Road Show, episode number 101.5. My name is John Morgan. Cold coffee is with me. We are in Las Vegas at the Casa de Café.
Casa de Café Frio.
It's the morning after UFC 209. We got ourselves a little bit of sleep last night. Long day as it is. And figured we'd get together. Probably wasn't too much of a rush to talk about that one fight. I want to talk about UFC 209, Elkins versus Bektic. What an incredible main event we had on FS1, the three-rounder between.
The bloody three-rounder.
Oh, my God. I will say, man, that was literally one of the best comebacks I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that was unreal. The press room kind of erupted at that point. You know, of course, when all the good fights happen, of course, we're doing interviews and shit like that. But everybody's kind of keeping an eye on that. And everybody's just like, oh, my God, is it gonna stop? Look at it. Even the first round, the cuts that were opened up in the first round was just horrific. You know, the opening on right above his eye was just – I think it was his right eye. It was just split open. That when, of course, the camera, the top camera, the guy's standing on the turnbuckle or whatever and looking in – and then you just—it's like you see right into his brain matter. It was horrific, but it was fantastic all in the same time. I mean, unbelievable. You can't ever say enough of the determination and the toughness of Darren Elkins. And you know, now this is a guy that has went so far as to brand the damage on his chest. Now he was wearing the damage on his face. I forgot to tell you this. I know we'll talk more. I actually saw Mursad when we were walking from the tent. From the press room to the tent.
Right.
Passed him. He was kind of on his own. And I had to say, dude, that was an incredible fight. You know, like, always a pleasure to watch you fighting. Keep your head up. No, nothing to be ashamed about in that fight. It was such a fun fight to watch, and it was clearly his to, I don't want to say his to lose, because anything can fucking happen. He looked so dominant in that fight that there were points where I kind of stopped watching, because of course we were doing an interview and such, but I thought it was over.
Right.
You know, it was crazy. But
I think everybody in the arena thought it was over, other than Darren Elkins.
Right.
You know what I mean? I tweeted afterwards. I was like, he walked by press row. There was blood still running down everywhere. The emotion. I was like, that guy should never have to buy a beer again in his entire life. Like, if you see that dude in a bar, you better buy him a frosty beverage.
Because yeah.
That dude, just no quit in him, man. And we always knew that about Darren Elkins. A tough guy. Always fun to talk to. Just a pleasure of a dude to be around. But, I mean, there was a reason he was the biggest underdog on the card. I mean, Mursad Bektic was
huge.
A beast,
wasn't he
dude.
Like a
– like plus 600 almost?
Something like that. I remember
plus
seeing like five
plus
or
600.
It might even got up to 7 at one point.
Yeah, I think Bektic was minus 700.
Yeah.
And I think the comeback was like plus 550 to plus 600. Just amazing. And man, for the better part of three rounds – Bektic looked exactly like the beast that everybody thought he was going
to
be. But Elkins, no quit in that guy, man. And to battle through what he did and then to get up and seize the opening to score the punch and then the high kick. You know, the high kick come out kind of reminded me of the Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey knockout where you got a stunned opponent with the straight and then you come back with the high kick. And just the way Bektic fell head first and just kind of crumpled over. And then – and Joe Rogan said it perfect in the octagon afterwards, man. The primal just
The scream afterwards.
You know, like, oh, that to me, that was like MMA at its finest, like at its peak, at its here's a dude that was just getting his ass kicked and never quit, never gave up.
Yeah, it was. I think that's the funnest part, you know, as you watch. That's why I'm so amazed. These guys put themselves through something that most of us only think or would hope that in a moment of danger you'd be able to stand, you know, to pull that out of yourself.
Right.
So to see people do that, I think that's one of the most amazing things about this sport, when you see these people do these such amazing feats where most of us probably would have already quit, you know, would have gave up at some point. But for him to kind of keep it going, and it was amazing. The kick, I thought the kick was really, really devastating, but I think Joe or somebody even said it after the fact that he looked like he was already out. That the kick did made solid contact. It looked like it was right around the temple or just above the temple
the
on the side of the head.
Done the job.
But it looked like the punch has already done it. But if not, those kicks to the temple of the head easily, you know, can do that same sort of thing. But he was already on his way down, which just shows how much power and the precision of where he caught him with that punch. But I think at that point in the back, I know at least for myself and some of the guys next to me, I mean, I think our eyes just went as wide as could be, and we're just like, oh my Lord, is this really happening? And it was just fantastic. That was probably one of the best things, and that's why they always say, don't blink or don't look around.
That's right.
You know, just when you think a fighter's down and out, they completely surprise you and just leave you just amazed.
It's funny because, you know, when we did we went to go tape with the Phone Booth Fighting guys, that podcast that they did with the You're Welcome guys, you know, Chael Sonnen and Frank Mir. And Chael talked about, you know, I asked him the question about how he and Tito felt, and Chael was talking about it. And he said that you know, there's a universal thing that fighters do sometimes, and it's not really talked about, that sometimes fighters will basically just stop moving and give up their neck so that they can get choked out and go home. You know, not to say that fighters are giving up, but, I mean, when you watch thousands and thousands of fights, you do sense moments like that where you're like, that dude just wants out of there, man. He probably could defend that choke, but he's done. And I think Elkins could have had done that at any point during that fight, man. He was just getting beat up so bad. I thought maybe he might not come out for the second. I thought maybe he might not come out for the third. But to do what he did, and now he's on a four-fight winning streak. Oh, man, just – God, that just got me excited, man. I could have gone home right then.
So I know that he was the one guy that we all wanted. We all wanted him to come back in the back talk, and we wanted him to come to the presser. We did see him in the back behind backstage when we were all transitioning to the press conference. And it's funny because I don't think the PR even knew that he was back there as well, because when I first hit up a couple of them, they're like, oh, he was transported. And I was like, no, I literally just passed him. He's back there. We'd love to talk to him. But by that time, they didn't have him slated for the press conference. So the team left, of course. I mean, but when you see some pictures, Mike Bond was able to catch a picture of him backstage. And it's amazing what some of these doctors do, because from seeing what that gash was and how he looked initially, I thought he would have looked a lot worse. Granted, I'm sure by this point right now he does, because
yeah,
of swelling,
now the bruising and
all
swelling,
the swelling and stuff. I'm sure he looks horrific, but he was probably the guy outside of maybe Thompson. I mean, of course, everybody wanted to talk to the champ,
sure.
But Elkins was definitely the guy I think that I wanted to hear
I
from the most, and I think what most of the media wanted to hear. So hopefully we'll catch up to him soon and get his thoughts on this fight and just figure out, you know, how do you do what you do, brother? Because it is amazing. His toughness and determination and his lack of quit is something to be admired.
It is, and I tell you what, I really don't think it does anything to take away from Bektic. You know
what
I mean?
No,
like,
no.
He was dominant. He looked fantastic. I mean, nothing about that says, oh, that guy isn't who we thought he was.
No, he looked fantastic.
He just had one moment where things didn't go his way, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, and that's just credit to Elkins. I mean, like they say, people can get caught. I mean, it was a perfect situation where Elkin had him up against that cage, was doing the exact right things. I mean, Mursab was doing what he needed to do to get out of that situation. He just got caught.
Crazy.
You know?
It's a comeback of the year candidate. Everybody was tweeting it last night talking about it. It is true, man. I think we'll definitely be remembering this fight. And what's funny is that it's only the submission of the year after Yuri Alcantara was a submission of the year against – or submission of the year, comeback of the year against Luke Sanders with his submission win. Another very, very similar fight with Yuri Alcantara, basically just getting beat up.
Yep.
Again, Luke Sanders, a guy that was undefeated. It's crazy.
Incredibly dominant.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy how eerily similar these fights are, right? Like, Luke Sanders was another guy that was just dominating, a former undefeated guy who still, to me – looks like somebody that's going to do some damage in the bantamweight division.
134 total strikes to 27.
That's
insane. That's about as dominant as it gets. 94 significant strikes to 23. They both had one takedown. Yuri, of course, had the submission attempt, which was successful.
Yes, which went well in his favor.
Went well for him, but Luke looked so good. There was something – he had this calm demeanor all week. You know, looked cool as ice. He had his glasses on there.
Yep.
Looked tough as balls. But when that dude, he was so impressive. I think that was just, if anything, credit to Yuri being able to pull it out. And he even said as much. He wasn't happy about his performance. Everything he was trying to do, nothing worked out. But luckily, he was able to fall back upon his jiu-jitsu skills, and that's what saved him.
I think two things that really stood out to me about this fight, other than Yuri's toughness. Number one, I think the illegal knee that Luke landed – cost him the fight, because I think he was really close to getting the finish. And that illegal knee, as weird as it may sound, even though Yuri's the one that, you know, was affected by it, I think it cost Luke the fight, because that stopped that sequence of striking. It did.
Yeah.
And I will say this too, credit to Yuri, because at first, Yuri, you know, Goddard calls timeout, and Yuri kind of collapses to the canvas, and you're like, "Ah, that's a dude that was just getting his ass kicked." It's like, "Here's my way out.
Yeah,
here's my way out. I got hit by illegal knee.
Yeah, he could have easily did that.
Easily, just like, I can't see, can't see. Yeah. Illegal knee, no contest. You were getting your ass kicked, and now you got no contest." Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, here we go."
In the back, it's funny because I'm glad that he didn't. Maybe if he would have been singing a different tune, if the fight ended up not going his way. But in the back, he was like, "Yeah, it hurt. It did some damage, but it wasn't that bad."
Okay.
You know, so he didn't seem like he was that harmed by it. But, you know, this is a guy I also asked, how did you even weather the initial storm, you know? And this is a guy, he's like, "I'm used to going into camp. I'm used to train. I'm used to the taste of my own blood in my mouth. That's just what we do." To paraphrase what he said. You know, you can go and watch the highlight on YouTube. We have some of the backstage stuff. It's not the full interview. It's kind of crunched down. It might be the full interview because it's about 3.5 minutes. So it might be the full thing, but you'll kind of hear that. And it's just these athletes are so amazing. The shit that they put themselves through and what they're willing to do. I taste my own blood in my mouth. I'm calling for help.
911.
I'm calling 911 or I'm getting my gun. Damn it.
Well, as I want to say this too, and I actually told Mark Goddard this last night as well. You know, I thought Yuri Alcantara was very close to getting finished in that fight.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I think Mark Goddard handled it perfectly. Mark was right on top of it. And every single time that he said, "I need you to move," Yuri moved.
He did, but it was so close.
Oh, it was borderline.
It was almost a matter of – I thought we were going to see his arm start making the swing.
Yeah.
It was so close. There was a couple points where I actually in the back raised my hand like
– Stop it.
Stop it.
I know,
what are you doing?
And I wouldn't have had a problem with it. I'm with you, but it was weird because I was you know, paying attention because I'm like you. I thought this fight was almost over. But I'm telling you, every single time Mark was like, "I need you to move," he moved. Even if that meant he took a punch as he moved, he moved.
And he was still there.
It's not the turtle. You know, if you're just turtling and
it came pretty close.
He was close.
He came close because there was a point where a couple times – his head's down. He had his hands on the back of his head, and guy was just wailing on him. I thought there was definitely a couple points there where I could go back and say, all right, at this point, there's been 7, 8 shots, what felt like, of nothing returning, and he's just flopping from one side to the other. The guy maintained on his back, and at that point, I was like, Sanders done enough. Like, just stop it.
Right. I wouldn't have had a problem with it.
I wouldn't have had a problem at all.
All right. Well, listen, rare that we start a post-fight and a half with discussion of two preliminary bouts. But damn
they were phenomenal.
Those were just two all-time classics to me, man. They really were. Fights that have those momentum shifts like that, those moments of, you know, somebody being tested and pushed it to the fullest extent, and somehow coming back and, you know, dealing with the adversity and finding something deep within themselves to pull it out, that's just special shit.
Yeah.
Shit to me, to be honest with you, man.
That's why you got to watch that shit. That's why it's always amazing when people – I mean, I get it. It's a long night. If you get there from the beginning, you get there to the end. But when people pay
you're talking about like six and a half hours.
It's a long day. But, man, when you – I guess maybe you have the luxury to watch at home, which not everybody does when it's a $50, $60 card.
Right.
But – these prelims, I mean, it's amazing what these people put out there. And when you take the – I'm always amazed and pleased when, you know, I watch all the fights. Granted, I'm there working them. But even if I'm at home, if I can watch all the fights because you see stuff like this, you know, I know a lot of cats out there just wait for the main card. They in their brains are like, that's when the main action happens. Prelims, this is when I'm kind of just taking my time pre-gaming at a bar. You know, then I'm going to come take my time. I'm going to get in and get my seat. You're missing fights like this.
Yep.
Because this shit right there, that was absolutely incredible.
It was spectacular. So, of course, we kind of joked that it was the main event, UFC 209, Elkins versus Bektic. It was not. It was UFC 209, Woodley versus Thompson 2. Tyron Woodley defends his welterweight title, picks up a majority decision win over Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And Cole Coffey, I mean, listen, there's just no way to say it. It just wasn't a super entertaining fight. And, it's so hard to figure out the best way for me to approach this and to talk about it or whatever, because the last thing I'm going to do is question the ability of these two fighters. The last thing I'm going to do is question the desire of these two fighters. The last thing I'm going to do is question anything about what they do, because they are incredible martial artists, and we've seen them both do incredible things in their career. But just on this particular night, it wasn't particularly exciting, and I don't think that's unfair to say.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. You know, and but I guess that's maybe because maybe we're so spoiled where we love every. I mean, everybody loves the finishes. Everybody loves that sort of stuff. But I think when we sit back and look at it, did it have what we all anticipated? We wanted to see. I wanted to see spinning kick after spinning kick from Stephen Thompson. I want to see Tyron bulldoze in there and do his thing. But I think both guys did an amazing job after the fact of talking about strategy and talking about the respect of, you know, we have such dangerous opponents over there. You got to stay in your head. You got to control your emotions. You got to play it the right way. And I think for me, I had to step back and say, you know, one, here's Stephen Thompson looking across at such an incredibly dangerous Tyron Woodley, who at any moment could shoot for my leg and has the power to knock me out. How do I gauge the distance? How do I try to work these kicks in while still sort of trying to control the octagon? So you could tell him, especially in their game plan, he had it in his mind of that's one of the things we have to establish, and that's going to help, you know, win the judges over. Here's Woodley. I don't want to just charge in because I'm going to take a knee to the face. You know, he commented about how the double jabs that were coming back and catch him, so he didn't want to go in. So while it wasn't, in a sense, this all-out flashy war that I think all of us knew that this fight could be, I think if we go back and we look at it in the eyes of two technicians going in there that are so dangerous and so fantastic at what they do, it was a high-level chess match, and there's nothing fun about watching chess sometimes, but when you sit back and watch a chess match and you understand the finesse of what the two players are doing, you're like, wow, that was really amazing. You know, there's something cerebral about it that I think, and that's more on me, that sometimes I have to separate my heart and just think of it and look at the two athletes and what they're doing to really appreciate it. I think sometimes it's beyond me because I guess I go back to the heart and the primal, you know.
Right.
You just want that quick little, oh, that was amazing.
Right.
So you're right. And in all aspects, especially the first couple rounds, I think that was where most people had a hard time judging. Just looking on the stats, they were virtually identical. It's crazy because there were so many people that, you know, that when you look at the total strikes, they were, in the sense, pretty identical, or Tyron got credit for a lot of them. It's because for that one round where he was on top, throwing right. all those punches. But when you look at it, the first round, 6 total strikes for Thompson,
yeah.
5 for Woodley. You know, you go to the second round, 8 strikes for both of the guys. That's not a lot of strikes from guys that are known for their striking.
It's tough.
It's tough to be excited about a fight when you're not seeing the action that you know both of these guys. But they both went. I mean,
they both explained it very well.
Afterwards, like, you know, you're not in there with them.
Right.
You're not going in there and trying. And when you realize how dangerous, you know, granted, I would get in there with them. They would have no problem sizing me up.
Oh,
they
no,
would
no.
know I have no skills. They would strike the shit out of me. But, of course, I would be respecting them and wanting to sidestep and run away. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough. And maybe that's on me now growing as a viewer at different times to not be upset that a fight doesn't deliver, because at least in this thing, when they did deliver, when they did do it, I can understand why. It's one thing if you have one athlete, I think, that's clearly has advantages over another that never pulls the trigger, then when you see two that are almost perfectly balanced style-wise, that there was maybe a little too much respect.
Well, see, and I think you're dead right, and everything you're saying is 100% on. I mean, they explained it very well. Like, listen, I was trying to bait him. He was trying to bait me.
Yeah.
We're both counter-strikers.
Both counter-strikers.
And,
yeah.
you know, Tyron explained, like, he sees the feints and the angles
yeah.
that Wonderboy creates. Wonderboy, same thing. He's like, I know he's dangerous if he comes back. So all that is right, and you're right. It was a high-level chess match. But that's what I'm saying. I believe it's okay to say, I didn't love that fight. I wasn't entertained by that fight. Now, maybe not booing quite as much as the crowd was booing.
Yeah, that was a little crazy.
But I think it's okay yeah. as a viewer to be like, you know what, man, I just didn't love that fight
yeah.
without it being an insult to the guys. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like, I don't think you have to question them as martial artists or question their heart or their desire or any of those things to say, I just didn't love that fight.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? I was surprised by the boos. That at that point, I think that's when people just – they let that frustration, because I think that's just a vocalization of that, oh, they had so much anticipation of the fireworks
right.
that could happen with two different people. But I also find that at times, I get it why you're booing, but it's, I hope they realize, I mean, that's so fucking disrespectful to two super high-level guys that actually went that far as to do it, but I totally get it as well. I mean, there's times I go, I'll watch a band, and if a band doesn't play the song I want to hear, I'll fucking boo. You know, and that's just me being shitty.
I guess that's the bad thing, too, about the show being, you know, 6 hours long. That's 6 hours worth of consumption.
Six
levels.
Hours of drinking. You're right, you know. But, yeah, I am kind of, I guess, glad at this part to not think about these two fighting right now. But I think in the universe, these two are such perfect answers to each other's style.
Right.
I think we've seen that now in two fights, that now I kind of want to see them have questions against somebody else. And I think they're probably happy to get away from that as well. I think Steven wants to get back there sooner because it's about the belt.
Right.
It's about reaching that top level. I think we already know how he stands and how great he is against most other opponents, mm-hmm. you know, and not that he isn't great against Tyron by any means. But it'd be nice to see how they go back to another guy. Because
I agree. Get them apart from each other for a little while.
Get them apart and let both of them shine again, because something when they get together, man, they so balance each other that it's – while it might not be the most fun to watch, it is still easy to appreciate what they did in there.
Well, let me talk about scoring. You talked about how close those first two rounds were especially. I almost never go with the 10-10. Almost never.
Yeah.
But in round
Neither
one.
Does Bob Bennett.
That's right. I scored this fight. I actually scored this fight a draw. And I was like, oh my God, please don't be another draw. I'm
You're not
so
the,
glad.
Other people were saying that in the back as well. Like, can you believe it? We might see it again.
I had the first round of 10-10. I just thought there was so little between them. I get, Bob Bennett came to the post-fight press conference. If you haven't seen that, definitely. We'll play a little bit of audio here in a second because you got to hear some of this. But he came to the back. If you want to watch the whole thing, it's on YouTube.
Which is crazy because how few – that's like, what, second time, maybe third time that anybody at the commissions went on record after
fight? First time
they've
ever set like that.
Really?
First time they've ever – that
I've got a little fired up.
Not first time
end.
Ever. First time Bob Bennett has done it, I should say. Yeah. No, he did get a little bit fired up at the end. I love it. Let me just say this, first of all. I love it.
We've
talked about
cool.
the fact, man, transparency, having people answer for what they do. I love it, man. I mean, I'm not saying we necessarily need to speak to the officials, the referees, the judges.
Yeah.
But if we could have a spokesman for
maybe
them.
Sal, maybe on the 10-8.
It would be great. You know what I mean? It would be opportunities to talk to them.
Especially, I would like to hear what Bob said to him, you know, as you'll hear
Bob,
you know, Bob talk
a
bit. But he was like, hey, you know, we had a talk. I'm like,
well,
that's good.
I love the fact that it was there. So I scored this fight draw. I had a 10-10 in that first round. Again, just saw so little between it. I went to Wonder Boy in the second, very, very slightly. I went to Wonder Boy in the fourth. And then, of course, round three and round five were clear. You had the – or at least I thought they were clear. You know, you had the takedown in round three by Tyron. And then, of course, round five, obviously very clear with the knockdown and the punches on top. So, in a bizarre way, Kolkovy, I kind of feel like the result is justice, if that makes sense. I mean, the only significant action of the fight – belong to Tyron Woodley. Now, that doesn't always matter. I mean, go back and look at a fight like GSP, Johnny Hendricks, you know, a very controversial fight in history where you had three close rounds, two clear rounds, one guy that looks beat up. You know what I mean? This is a prize fight, so it's not the thing where you look at the totality of the fight. But I don't know. I guess in some ways I do feel like it's a little bit of justice because to me the only real significance of the fight was the takedown and the knockdown, and those both belong to Woodley. So
that's true.
Even though I scored the fight a draw, I kind of was okay with Woodley winning.
Yeah.
And I definitely, you know, I saw some claims of robbery, which I mean, in close fights, I just hate hearing the word robbery.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see it. I mean, I guess if you give that round one to Woodley or to Wonderboy 10-9, then yeah, now all of a sudden it becomes Wonderboy's fight. But God, those first two rounds were so close. I just don't understand. I don't think you could call robbery no matter what the result was because it was so damn close.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. It's what – what can you say? It's one of those things that – I can see – I wouldn't say robbery. And maybe for the action that happened towards the end, it was like, okay, now I feel like the momentum was there. I saw a clear – at least winner of that particular round. So it left the lasting – taste in my mouth of what I was like, okay,
the right guy.
That's the right guy. So I don't feel bad. If anything, probably the first fight I was maybe leaning to the point where I was like, maybe that could have been Woodley. I'm sorry.
Finished in
Thompson,
the other direction.
And
finished
now,
in the other direction.
And this kind of, you know. So who knows? Who knows? But super, super close. And yeah, like I said, I'm kind of glad. Just be on
let's
it.
Get over it.
Let's get over it because it's. You know, there it wasn't the it certainly wasn't the most incredible night of the fight of the night, but it was good. I'm happy that Tyron's got the belt. I'm happy that he, got the win. I'd be happy if Steven got the win as well. But I'm glad Tyron's gonna leave definitively. Even though he even said as much, he's like, I still don't feel like I've had that moment where I'm like, I'm the champ. You know, so I'm hoping. He can kind of sit on this for a couple days and start getting that feeling. He deserves it. I like the dude. And I guess we'll see what goes on next, you know, who he has next, and hopefully they'll get that moment soon because, you know, it's like, brother, now you got the belt, you've got some wins, you know, I know the last one wasn't the draw, but feel good about yourself, man, because you're doing some amazing shit out there. But Steven has nothing to hang his head about either. What a stud,
nah,
man.
He's still a beast.
He is gonna, if he's not a start already, I mean, he's definitely got all the makings. I know we've said that before. I think he has all the makings to be a big future star. Not that he isn't a star
fun
now.
Fun style. Easy, well spoken.
Easy to market. I mean, I love the whole story. I love the martial arts. I love the respect.
To kids.
Dude, I was watching that video and I was like, this is the kind of guy you want out there as a face for your company. Nothing wrong with Woodley. I think he's a great face out there as well.
Right.
But, you know, anytime you see anybody involved with the community and involved with kids, all that kind of stuff, it's good for the sport. It's good for everything. So, you know, I sound cheesy to say big future for both these guys, you know, but they'll both be back. And I think if anything else, they're going to learn a lot about this, you know, they're going to come back even stronger. I think the preparation to go back in there and have somebody that is just so equal, like, I don't want to call him a nemesis because there's no hatred between these two, but just the fact of finding the guy that pushes you to your limit. I almost feel bad whoever's going to be next for either one of these guys because I think they prepared themselves so well and so at such a high level that whoever's next, if they carry over the same mentality and the same preparation, which I'm sure they will, it's going to be a really, really tough day for whoever's next.
Well, Tyron was as you said, not exactly thrilled with how things went down, but did feel like he was justified in the victory and did feel like there was a reason for the way the performance went the way it went. And he stopped by and spent some time at the post-fight press conference. And here's what the chosen one had to say.
Tyron, congratulations on a victory this evening.
Thank you.
I know it's still fresh, but just give us your thoughts overall. A very, very intense fight, very technical fight. How did you feel about your performance overall this evening?
You know, when you fight someone for the second time, especially somebody like Wonderboy, he's really crafty. A lot of people don't realize what I'm seeing when I'm in there is not the same thing that the fans may see. They want to see the bulldozer come forward because they've seen me do that so many times. But when I came for it a few times, you saw me get those double right hands upside the head. So his counterattacks is a lot. You know, it's probably the best counterattacker in our division. So I had to be cautious. I had to be patient. I had to really block out the boos. And I had to find the right entry to get in close enough to do damage. And it took a while for me to get there. But, you know, I got it done.
You know, among the media and among fans, scoring was across the board. Some of those rounds were very tight and tough to score. How did you guys have it, and how comfortable were you, especially after given what happened in the first fight, that you had done enough to win?
You know, I didn't get a chance to talk to Steven afterwards very much. But me personally, I thought the fight was close. I thought it was close going into the fifth round. You know, it's kind of a sci-fi. You know, I didn't really realize exactly what round we were in and what. But I just, my coaches always tell me to finish strong, finish hard. And you guys know me, man. I've only had like three decision, you know, fights, probably in the UFC, maybe a couple more. But in general, I'm always trying to finish anyway. I'm always trying to finish the fight. So when I hit him, I knocked him down. I saw him hurt. I guess I knocked him down again. I didn't recognize I knocked him down twice in the round. And my coaches told me I probably shouldn't have hit him again because it looked like he was out. But he's a tough kid, man. He got a tough chin. I haven't hit anybody that many times, and they lasted since Carlos Condit. So hats off to Steven Thompson. Very difficult guy to prepare for. Very annoying training camp to bring in guys. And, you know, I'm excited to move on with my career and prepare for a regular freestyle fighter.
I know that, you know, you're accustomed to kind of getting a little bit of disrespect and that sort of thing, being, you know, the underdog and, you know, there were the boos tonight. But I want to ask you, was it a frustrating fight for you? Because it did seem like, you know, you were doing and trying to do what you could, but again, both counterpunches in there, moments of inactivity. Was it frustrating for you to stick to the game plan and maybe not come out of your shell a little bit and put yourself at risk?
Yeah, it was frustrating. I mean, there were moments where I should have, you know, maybe faked the shot, came up punching, went back to the shot, came up punching. Just some stuff to chop the tree down to get a little closer to a longer opponent. So, yeah, I could have done a little bit more of that. But there were times where the opening wasn't there for the takedown. It wasn't there. You know, like trying to just jab him in the face, it's hard because he looks a lot closer than what he is, and he's waiting to fade back and counter with his right hand. And I've seen it time and time again. He fades back, counter right hand, lee leg roundhouse, and that's what he knocked guys out. I mean, he did kick me in the head this time. Last fight, I was able to neutralize every single kick he threw. I think he landed maybe one in the throat. This time, he landed probably two upside the head. So, you know, I was tough, and I stepped forward. You know, that's what champions do.
You know, in the fifth round, Tyrone, you came out so hard, which you didn't do in those other rounds. And I wonder why you felt the need to do that if you felt it was going okay for you, you know, in the first four.
Well, you never know what is, if it's okay for you. You should never go in there with the mindset, okay, I'm up, let me coast, because that's how you go out there and you lose a fight. I just wanted to finish strong. If I would have won all four rounds clearly and dominated him and took him down and laid on top like everybody wants to see me do, then I would have still came out hard in the fifth round. It's just the way that we train. That's the way we practice. And that's just ingrained in my mind.
When you, and I wasn't suggesting that you knew, you know, but I was suggesting that since that was successful, you know, had you thought about that even earlier in the fight? Because obviously your pressure forced him to change and you were able to land that right hand.
My coach is, you know, obviously a little tentative from the last fight, you know, the way the judging went. And, you know, I really feel like they were telling me, go, go, go. You got to go forward, because they didn't want me to ease up and think that I was winning the fight. And, you know, I'm just glad my conditioning is to a point where I can forget I was in the damn fifth round. I thought we were in the fourth round until my coach reminded me. So I'm just blessed to have a great coaching staff, great team behind me, and I'm really coming into my own as a champion.
Does the frustration or even matter when Dana was in there earlier and said that he basically wasn't impressed and he's kind of frustrated and he said he doesn't know what's going to happen with y'all next?
I mean, I want to see Dana get in there and fight Wonder Boy. Watch everybody else that walked in there. Watch Patrick Cote. Watch Robert Whitaker. Watch all these guys that thought they were just going to bulldoze him and they disrespected his style. I did the opposite. I embraced his style. I brought in the world champion currently, Avery Plowden, in his weight division. I brought in Sage Northcutt. I brought in Chris Bang. I brought in tons of guys in the actual sport fighting world, Raymond Daniels. And you can't disrespect that style. What happens is you think you got to figure it out, and kicks and punches come from weird angles, and you find yourself without this, and you find yourself knocked out. So I know, you know, this is a sport where you guys love to see knockouts. You love to see the glory. You love to see blood, guys getting beat up, and then he find a way to come back, and then other guy, the teeter, I love it. I love watching it as well. But guess what? I love being the world champion, and sometimes it's not the sexiest fight on earth.
When you look at that division, who do you want most of all next?
You know, if I say I want to fight someone, then the whole internet goes crazy. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go vacation. I'm shooting a movie next week, taking my family to Puerto Rico after that. And, you know, I'll let my managers and Dana White figure that out.
The week leading up to the fight, you told reporters not to ask you about GSP versus Bisping. Mm-hmm. Now that the fight's over, can I ask you about GSP versus Bisping?
You know, GSP versus Bisping, you know, that's their fight, man. You know, I feel like what God has for me and what's in my, you know, future and what's in my plans is in my plans. That wasn't in my plans. George St. Pierre could have easily, you know, you came for 1 second to tell me that if George St. Pierre wanted to fight me, they would have canceled me in Stephen's fight. They would have rebooked him with somebody else, had him fight Damian Maia. He probably would have waited in a you know, a back wing for a second, and I would have fought George. You know, he has enough power, and he's done enough for the sport to be able to come back and do that type of move. You know, look at Yoel Romero. He's going to have to take a back seat and chill out for a second. So I just think that fight is for them. You know, I think what's going to be in the future for me, what's in my plans, is for me. And when those things happen, I just continue to beat everyone, continue to try to be the best welterweight I can. And eventually when I finish and it's all said and done, I want to be the greatest of all time.
Tyron, just a quick follow-up with you. Are you comfortable waiting till May 13th to determine what your next move is? I mean, obviously that's 2 months out. I mean, were you hoping to have an idea of what comes next before that? Or are you comfortable waiting till that Maya Masvidal fight on May 13th?
You guys giving me a lot of power because I run all the shots. I tell you who I'm fighting, when I'm fighting, how I'm fighting them. You know, I think we know how this game goes, guys. You know, I don't – I have an influence and I can speak on what I would like to happen. But at the end of the day, I'm not in absolute control of that. But my managers will, you know, try to put me in the best position for me. You know, George said this the other day, and I can't really knock George for fighting Bisping. You know what I mean? He made a lot of sense in his reasons for wanting to fight him. But it's all about timing. I never said I wouldn't fight Steven. I just didn't think it necessarily had to happen today. I could have fought Damian Maia. Then I could have fought him. You know what I mean? So it's all about shuffling the deck. So a lot can happen between now and May, you know. What happens if one of those guys, God forbid, incur an injury and then they're out? I might be fighting the person that's, you know, still healthy. Who knows? What if something happens between George St. Pierre and Bisping, where one of those guys are, you know, not able to fight? And I'm not wishing harm or injury on anyone, but we know our sport. We train so hard. Most of the injuries take place in the training camp just to get prepared for a fight. So, like I said, I'm going to just stay in shape, stay training, and we'll see what happens.
So, Tyron Woodley, your UFC welterweight champion, got to think the winner of that Demian Maia, Jorge Masvidal fight in May is next up for him, especially if it's Demian Maia coming out of there. I mean, if Masvidal wins, I don't see any reason you couldn't make the argument that he deserves it, what that would mean for the cross-ATT rivalries there. I guess we'd have to figure out. But, man, I guess you have to wait until May, which kind of sucks for Tyron a little bit, but it sounds like he's got some other stuff going on in the meantime. So maybe that fight in Dallas becomes a number one contender fight. Now, again, Cole Coffey, what we said, I mean, it's the scoring, those 10-10 rounds, just want to – I mean, I honestly mean this. I really want to praise Bob Bennett for coming in and sitting down there, and I hope that this is something that we see more of from more commissions, is that somebody is willing to step up to the plate and answer a few questions. Now, my fear is that people are going to take quotes, and I don't want to say out of context, but I mean really, you know, something is going to get said wrong. I mean, these are people that are not used to speaking in the media. They're not used to doing a ton of, you know, public speaking and PR training and things like that. And I'm afraid they're going to get busted on saying something stupid and then never want to do it again, if that makes sense. But as long as it lasts, I like the transparency of it.
I do too. I think it's it can get he has a way of getting pretty long-winded at times, so I don't think we need to have him up there everywhere every time. But I think it was great, and I thought it was pretty unique. I was a little surprised because when he came up there, I thought he was going to give news of something worse, something, you know, breaking of. Mm-hmm. By the way, I must come back and tell you guys that.
Dude, listen, on the way from the arena, the way T-Mobile is, you have to be escorted from the arena floor to where the press conference is in a mm-hmm. tent. And the way you go is through the VIP section. And literally, bro, as I was walking through the VIP hallway, I saw Dana White and Bob Bennett like huddled around a scorecard looking at it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, my God.
What happened?
Something went wrong.
Moonlighting.
Yeah.
Moonlighting is your winner.
We're going to get to the press conference and we're going to find out. So it's so funny you say that because I was like, oh, God. Oh, God. Please don't let this happen.
So I'm glad nothing like that happened because, you know, that would not be great. But I agree. It's good. I think anytime they're willing to be available for stuff like that, especially if there's something questionable. And I liked the candidness of how they had already had talks about the scorecard. And, you know, he talked to the judge while they initially praised that the three judges on the main event were of the best caliber in his mm-hmm. mind, that they still went back and had a talk to about the 10-8 round. So knowing that that actually happens, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we all hope was happening, but
right.
Now he's going on record saying that, yes, it is happening. So I think that's great. I mean, it's good to hear. And should there have been some more shady shit, and if it was maybe more questionable, I'm glad that they're there. I'm glad he was there to explain his side and even kind of said, you know, I know this is what some of you think, but we went the other direction.
You know,
I think anytime that happens or that he's available, I think it's great for the sport.
I agree. I think so, too. I think that just helps us all out. It helps there be, like I said, more transparency. I think the more transparency you can have, the better. I just think it makes – it's just for the best interest of everybody involved. So, as I said, the whole thing is up on YouTube if you want to watch the full thing. He actually talks about some of those as well. But I wanted to play a little bit of Bob Bennett right now, the Nevada State Athletic Commission Executive Director, sitting down at the press conference and answering questions from the media and explaining his take on 10-10 rounds. And I pressed him a little bit on it. I still think reading between the lines, Bob, and I know Mark Ratner has said it in the past as well, they really don't want 10-10 rounds. And honestly, I'm reluctant to use it too. I mean, I gave a 10-10 in round one here in this fight. I hate giving 10-10s because I kind of do feel the same way that you got to pick a winner, man. Like if you use a 10-10 as a crutch, man, that's just – especially in a three-round fight. In a three-round fight, you're just begging for problems. You're begging for more draws. But every now and then, I think they do exist. And when you're only talking about, you know, four or five punches being thrown in a round, you know, I don't know that just holding the center of the octagon is enough to win a round. You know what I mean? So I don't like using them. I did in this fight. I think, well, judge for yourself. Let's hear what Bob Bennett has to say about 10-10 rounds and kind of what he thought about this fight in general.
So don't throw anything, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Hey, Bob, my question just goes to what I was asking Stephen about is that what do you tell your officials in terms of we don't see a whole lot of 10-10 rounds in this sport. Those first two rounds were very slow, you know, as I think anybody would agree upon. When there's very little action like that, what do you tell your judges in terms of does a 10-10 round exist or not?
You know, I'm not used to this microphone, so I apologize. Yeah, you know, 10-10 rounds are an anomaly. We have a pre-fight meeting with our judges before every fight. And a matter of fact, this very subject did come up. And the judges in this particular fight were some of the best judges in MMA, Derek Clary, Sal D'Amato, and Chris Lee. You should be able, if you're a top-notch A-plus judge, you should be able to discern through the scoring criteria who wins a fight, even if it's razor thin. Does a 10-10 round come up? Yes, but in the 3 years that I've been, almost 3 years I've been the executive director, we have not had a 10-10 round. And I think it's incumbent upon the judges to, you know, be on the top of their game and to be able to pick a winner in that round. Because somebody, one effective strike or kick can determine who wins a round.
Finally, to the best of my knowledge, Nevada hasn't adopted the new rules.
That's correct.
Could you explain why, and do you think that in 2017 that time will come?
Yes, that will definitely come. That's a decision that is made by the commissioners, not by myself, but I have the information to give to them, and it's really based on, to make a long story short, how the state works. So after once the new fiscal year starts, July 1st of 2018, we will have it'll take place in a commission meeting, and those new rules will be provided to the commissioners for them to either rule in favor of them or not, or in part of them or not, to include a down fighter. And just for your edification, before every fight, MMA fight, we let them know that we didn't adopt those rules yet. And in the pre-fight instructions given by the referees, the fighters are aware of that.
Bob, just one quick note for clarification. Just kind of reading between the lines a little bit. I mean, when you say that, you know, one strike, one punch or kick could be the difference in a round, and that a top judge should be able to determine the winner. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say it's your position that you kind of recommend against a judge issuing a 10-10 round?
Not at all. And that's a fair question. I'm glad you asked me. No. These judges, just like in the boxing events, you get a score around the way you see it. I don't put any pressure or stress on them. It's totally incumbent upon them. I have something that I use, which is called the POT index, for those of you that are familiar with it. And it actually tracks the officials, who's in the majority, who's in the minority, for difficult rounds, for easy rounds. There's some flaws to the system, but if you're familiar with those flaws, then it is one form of measurement as to who your better judges are and who have proven themselves under, you know, a lot of pressure. Like tonight's a big time fight for those judges. Don't think for a second that, you know, it's very easy for somebody to say, hey, I saw a 3-2 this way or that way. But you put your butt in that chair for 5 minutes, and when you don't see a lot of action, you've got to really always be on top of your game. But it's even more difficult when there's less punches being thrown. For instance, it's the last round, okay? Thompson was up 10-9. You know, with, 45 seconds left to go? Man, it went the other way. It went 10-9, and I'll answer the question before it's asked. The one judge had tatted 10-8. We went over it in the debriefing, and that 10-8 was unacceptable. Not that it would have affected the outcome of the fight, but just to share it with you, we certainly we strive to do the best we can, but, you know, we don't always succeed. and that judge should have scored that round 10-9. You can't have a three-point swing in 50 seconds, or it's certainly, I don't even know if anomaly is the right word, or just, you know, he just missed it. And usually he's spot on. But thank God it didn't affect the overall outcome of the fight. And in our opinion, which we do for a living, and we don't have a vested interest in who wins or loses, we had Mr. Woodley winning 3-2.
All right, so interesting fight all the way around. A lot of talking points around it for sure. Not the most exciting fight in UFC history, but I think, as you said, Cole Coffey, we'll see good things for both those fighters moving forward. They just happen to be pretty crappy matchups for each other in terms of putting on an exciting fight. Let's talk about what ended up being the co-main event. David Tamer picked up a unanimous decision win over Lando Venata. Certainly was not the co-main event we were all hoping for with Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson, but still got something very, very entertaining. And, man, two young guys that just brought it. I mean, this fight was as fun as it gets. Just two dudes banging it out on the feet. Lando with all that creativity and just everything that we've come to expect of him in his short little UFC run. And then David Tamer, man, that guy just proved to be a lot tougher than I thought. And, you know, I'm not saying a new, you know, star right now, but that was a hell of an introduction to the U.S. audience.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, because that was a super, super tough opponent that he was going up against. And, this is another one of the fights that we were kind of interviewing at the same time. So, but the times I was looking up there, I thought Lando was doing really well. So I kind of started checking out of the fact and thought, oh, Venata's got this. He's doing what we thought he would do. But goes to show, you can't sleep, because it was amazing. I thought he pulled out a great, great fight. He looked virtually unscathed in the back, you know, which is always amazed me that these guys can go in there and do what they
bang
do.
Bang it out for 15
just like
minutes.
Anderson never shows
he
a mark,
never marks
you know,
up.
So, but no, interesting dude, and he happens to have a good voice as well.
He does have a good voice. Well, it's funny, you mentioned, you know, we thought Lando would do what we thought he would do. Man, can I just say right now, I'm having the worst year of picks. I'm in dead last.
Dude, last night, I almost...
dead last.
If it wasn't for Tyron pulling it out, I said an all-time low. I missed every other pick. That's the only pick I got right last night.
On the whole card?
The whole fucking card.
Oh, my God.
Dude, it's a first. Like, normally I do pretty good. I was completely off the whole fucking night.
Wow.
So, yeah, if there was a record for sucking ass and picks last night, I still took home the record for being the shittiest pick last
right.
night. Unfortunately, didn't have Ariel.
Like, oh,
I was like, where's Ariel? Because Ariel is the worst
he's
in the picks.
He's always last, right?
So I was like, where's Ariel at? But we didn't get him on. We didn't.
Basically,
him
you guys
pick.
In the back do a little picks pool just
yeah,
to keep yourself entertained. There's no money on the line.
No.
There's no nothing like that.
It's more just bragging rights, you know, so that we can carry it up. We all see each other every week. So
right.
It's like, we'll see an event and it's like, oh, wait, who had it on the last event? We can only pretty much remember the past event because
right.
we see each other at so many events. So, yeah, we'll go and, you know, most of us do staff picks. I mean, I don't do it for Junkie because you guys won't let me do it for some reason. we all do our picks in the back just
Dance
so we can
up.
All
that's
sort
a,
of
– that's
so, we can, so we can just sort of have our own little bragging rights or whatever, and gives us something to kind of keep it lighthearted back there. So we all went through the picks, and I literally – thought I was going to go that whole card without getting – I was at the point I was keeping the tick marks and keeping score thinking, like, I suck.
You're like, oh, were we not picking the losers tonight?
Yeah.
I thought we were supposed to pick
– I was like
– this guy will
it's
lose.
It's hard.
This guy
I'd
will
imagine
lose.
Try to pick
– every loser.
And even if you picked every underdog, you would have lost last night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just one of those things. It's a tough sport, you know, to pick, but I literally had the worst night ever picking.
I need a reset, dude. I'm, you know, the staff picks every year, I've finished in like second or third every year on our staff. I've yet to win, which is frustrating. I think Ben won last year. I know Mike Bond won 1 year. I think Dan maybe won 1 year.
You step your game up, son.
Dude, I'm always second or third. Right now I'm in dead last, bro.
Is that always the bridesmaid, never the bride?
Yeah, man. Dead last. I had a horrible night last night. Anyway, I got to get
things
right, going in the right
picks
direction.
Back night.
Yeah,
in the backstage.
You know what I'm great at?
I think you tied, or you might even took it last night.
You know what I'm great at? I'm great at picking prelims, which is every year I
yeah.
tell them, because we watch so many fights, like you and yeah. I are at so many fights, and we watch them, and we're like intently there because we're covering them. I do really good on prelims. So every year I tell the staff, like at the beginning of the year, we're like, hey, do we want to change anything for this? Because we just picked the main cards only.
Darn, I threw it away.
And
I
I'm like, dude, we should pick prelims too, because I know that would favor me, because I know the rest
yeah.
of our staff doesn't necessarily like intently focus on the prelims
yeah.
the way I do. But yeah, at the main card.
I think you and Bond tied last night, actually. So Junkie won it last night. That's we couldn't take the award show in Vegas, but we took the picks last night.
Why you got to rub salt in the wound? I thought we'd move past that.
You know.
We need votes next year. We need votes next year, damn it. I'm going to campaign harder.
Yeah, I don't know. Fuck it. It's just a giant popularity contest.
I just don't
want
to even do the podcast anymore. Yeah. All right. Listen, well, David Tamer looked impressive. I don't want to take anything from him. And I do, you know, I got to say, this dude, not only did he handle himself in the cage, but he came to the post-fight press conference. And he sat down, and he answered my questions, which was great. I started out, and he answered a couple questions for me. And then before they even bothered to see if there was anybody else that had questions, he just rambled off on a couple things that he wanted to say,
yep.
Showed us his singing voice, made a couple of points, and then essentially mic dropped and walked out.
Yeah.
This is, let me tell you, this is how you handle a press conference right here.
David, congratulations on your victory this evening. An impressive performance. Can you talk about this whole week? Because I think you surprised us a little bit with the attitude that you had, the aggression that you had. I mean, you were fired up all week long. Can you tell us kind of what your attitude was coming into this fight?
Yeah, it was much things that went through my mind. And I don't think everybody believed that I'm going to win this fight. I was an underdog, but I improved them different, you know. So I win this fight. I'm very happy. And also respect to Lando. You know, I respect all the guys that step into that octagon because it's not just walk in a park. And he take good shots, you know. Usually I knock my opponents out, but this dude, he take good punches tonight. So, you know, all glory to him also, you know. And he's still young. He have future in front of him. So, yeah, I wish him the best luck in his future.
A lot of the stories this week, of course, especially the last few days, were around Khabib and Tony not being on the card anymore and it not being as special of a fight card. You guys get bumped up to the co-main event. How did that impact you personally at all? Did you feel a responsibility to perform? Were you, you know, nervous about being in a higher role? How did that impact you?
I was excited. You know, when I step into that octagon, that's my home. You know, I feel home when I'm there. And you know, I'm not there to just, you know, do a regular fight. I'm there to put the best show ever to the whole fans, all the world. So people love to watch me, and I will continue to do that.
And you said tonight you want to be a champion. You're not here just to fight. So, I mean, how quickly do you want to move up the ranks? And I guess for your next move, does that Stockholm card make sense for you?
Yeah. Right now, I'm going to enjoy my victory. I'm here in Vegas. It could be a better place. And, I'm going to take a vacation. Next week, I go to Miami Beach. So I'm going to spend some time there, enjoy my fight and have vacation. After that, I go back home to Stockholm, Sweden, and keep grinding on my training. And I will take the next after that. My friend Alexander Gustafsson and Teixeira, that fight is done now. It's going to be. So let's see. Maybe if they want me, let's see what's happened. And I'm very happy to introduce myself for the whole American. And for hope I get new fans over here. And thank you, everyone. And something that everyone, they don't know about me, I'm a good singer too. Viva Las Vegas, ho, ho, ho. Thank you, everyone. And that's my brother, Daniel Tamer. He have 6 fights, all of them win by the first round. He's 145 pounds, and for hope, he's the guy next Swedish up to that octagon in make his debut in UFC Stockholm, Sweden. Dana White, Sean Shelby, everyone. If you like my style, you should watch that dude. He's amazing. Thank you, everyone. Peace and love. I love you all. Thank you.
All right, David Tamer, I bet we'll be seeing him on that Stockholm show in May, the Stockholm show that was supposed to be Copenhagen, and ended up moving to Stockholm. I was told the UFC will do Copenhagen at some point. Basically, from what I was told, the venue is just a brand new venue, and there was just some details to be worked out, and didn't get done in time. So if you're a Danish MMA fan, fret not, my friends. The UFC will be heading your way soon. They just didn't get everything worked out with the venue in time, so they looked for a different location. All right, Daniel Kelly picked up the split decision win over Rashad Evans. Man, you know what's funny is going into this fight, we talked about it, that you know Daniel Kelly could sneak up on Rashad Evans, man. All the question marks around this fight were around Rashad Evans. And I thought Rashad answered most of the question marks. I mean, he definitely looked good at 185. Looks like a whole new guy at 185. Physically, he looked good. Just the execution. And I think, you know, I don't know what you chalk that up to necessarily, because there's the concerns is, you know, is it the fact that he hasn't fought in a year and that, you know, he's only been fighting once a year for the past couple years? Is it the fact that he did have the training issues, you know, with the Black Zillions camp moving around and things changing and that sort of thing? You know, I don't know exactly what to chalk it up to, but it just did seem like Rashad was struggling to pull the trigger. And, you know, it could be simply the way Daniel Kelly's, you know, kind of crowding style and pawing at him. I mean, maybe that was throwing him off a little bit. You know, tough for me to put my finger exactly on it. I think Rashad Evans is the one that's going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out what exactly went wrong. But just wasn't pulling the trigger.
Yeah, and I don't know what to credit to. Maybe it's the fact of just hasn't been a while since he's been in there and thrown a punch in a 100%, you know, go mode. I thought physique-wise, he looked absolutely phenomenal. I mean, unreal. Dude, all the credit to him, looked like an absolute beast. I thought, and even at the fight, you know, when they've had time to kind of get some more water in him, you know, eat some food, he still looked ripped as all get out. So I was like, good for that. But it's funny because Daniel in the back went on to pretty much say he wasn't as strong as he thought he would be. And I thought that was interesting from a guy that, you know, normally lives up at the light heavyweight range and that we've seen, you know, quite a bit bigger than that. So I'm not sure how much muscle mass he had to lose to kind of get down to this as well. And maybe it did affect him strength-wise that maybe he just didn't feel as comfortable because maybe just at this weight he's still feeling his body out because it's a newer process.
Sure.
So maybe, you know, in that sense, he kind of held back a little bit. But I don't know. Kelly's one of these guys, too. That he has, I mean, with the judo that he has, I think he had to kind of watch getting in there too close. Because I think if he was maybe Rashad, I love just calling him Rashad now, was afraid to maybe let him get hands on him and, you know, get some sort of a judo toss and then let him do that. So, do that route. But, you know, and eventually came up because I wanted to ask him, but, the number one journalist beat me to it when he asked, you know, if he thought there was a future for Rashad at that weight class. And he said he did think that there was a future for him. It was the first time, you know, going down and doing this sort of things. He's dealing with all the things that could be going on right now with making this move.
Yeah.
I know we've seen other athletes do well and thrive when they switch to a different weight class. And I think, you know, Rashad's a former champion. He can make the adjustments. He's a smart guy. He's an analyst. He has that analyzing mind. So I think he can go back and look and see what worked, what didn't work. If this does come back to the fact that maybe the best training setup wasn't there for him, that maybe with a proper – I don't want to say proper. I mean, these guys are all super high-level athletes. I mean, they know what they're doing, but it just feels like there was maybe some other elements that maybe we didn't get the best Rashad at this weight
right.
That we will eventually get. So I don't want to be one of these guys like, oh, go back to light heavyweight. You know, you had your shot. Stop,
well, I heard some people even saying, man, maybe Rashad should hang it up. I don't feel that way. I think I agree with Kelly there. I mean, I want to see more. You know, is Rashad nearing the end? Of course. I mean, I think he's 37 years old now. I mean, he can't fight forever. But this fight did not make me think that Rashad is definitely done. He's a shot fighter. I think we do need to see him again. I think we need to see him again at 185. I think he looked phenomenal there. You know, if he can maintain his body in between now and his next fight and, you know, not balloon up and make himself have a difficult cut or whatever.
He's still got super quick hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still a dangerous fighter. It's just I think he's going to have to feel it out and feel his body and see how he works within this division. I mean, he was a good-sized guy at light heavy. I mean, this is the kind of guy that – you know, should do well at this division.
And defensively, I mean, he was prepared for Kelly's judo.
Yeah.
He defended the judo well. Yeah. it was just offensively. It just the offense wasn't there.
It'll get there. It'll get there. I definitely would not be one of the people, you know, asking for a Hashad to step away or take a break. If anything else, regroup, you know, see how you do the next time around. Again, I think the work that he did to get to that 185, he looked absolutely phenomenal physique-wise, you know. And I mean, so I'm in envy of that he's able to get that going on, and I think he'll get there with the hands. I think he'll get there with the striking. It's just, you know, I think he's going to learn a lot about this. I think he's going to go back and look. And we said this about Dan. Dan is tough as nails. He's the kind of guy you sleep on. Not that Rashad was sleeping on. I think, if anything else, maybe he had a little bit more respect than maybe we thought he was going to give them. Maybe we thought he was just going to kind of go out there and just let his hands blaze. But Dan, man, I can't say enough. The dude is tough as nails. And this is a guy, I mean, I just envy the dude. The dude's – he even said, like, his knee was so –
he's going out there with just a blown-up knee, dude.
I mean, he is so tough. I'm just in admiration of the guy's toughness and what he's able to do. And these guys that he's beating, you know, it just goes to show, man. When Dan Kelly is fighting, do not consider him an underdog. The odds might say he's an underdog, but the dude pulls it out, man. So – he's got my vote.
Stud, man. He's such a loved guy in Australia as well. So wonder if they try to put him on that Auckland card.
Which I tried asking in the back before that. I was like, did they break it?
I heard your questions because we'd heard that it was probably going to happen, but nothing was official yet. We've been told, hey, listen, there's, you know, no pen has been put to paper yet, but it's probably going to happen. So it's funny because I heard you, like, I was listening to some of your audio where you're like, well, there's a show in June. I mean, maybe.
Should a card get announced in Auckland? I'm like, I don't want to get escorted out the back. I'm kind of quasi, I don't know if I should even say this, I kind of quasi cleared it. I was like, hey, by the way, I know Auckland's happening, but has this been announced? Because I want to ask Dan about Auckland. And then I actually got told that it was going to get announced later that day. Right. So I was like, fuck it. I was like, well, this is what I'm going to ask. And they were like, that's fine. So I kind of cleared it a little bit, which, not that you ever need to, but I'm not going to go out there and fuck it. I got to get the fucking breaking news.
Well, it's
I got
to
get whatever.
Well, here's the thing.
You know?
You have to be careful. It's just like the Copenhagen show, and this is why people might wonder why sometimes we hear things but we don't report it.
Yeah.
We don't want to ever be wrong, because when you're wrong one time, that ruins your word. And, you know, like we mentioned, we've heard this is happening.
Yeah.
We can't say for sure it's happening because, again – fortunately, we have enough relationships with people. They'll just be like, hey, listen, it's probably going to happen, but the pen has not been signed to paper yet, so I would not report that.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it changed. And we just talked about. And so we had heard that, you know, Auckland was probably happening, but we were told, but hey, it's not done yet, FYI.
Yeah.
So just some kind of stuff that happens behind the scenes. So sometimes we do hear things that we don't report.
Yeah.
And it's because we don't want to just talk about rumors. We want to talk about facts.
Yeah. And it's tough. I understand the desire to be first, the desire to get your name out there. You know, you're trying – I'm not trying to hang my hat on the wall and say, yeah, look what I did.
Although
we
should talk about the fact that Cole Coffey was the first one to confirm that Khabib Nurmagomedov was out of the fight.
That's true. And I saw others chirping, and they were looking, they're like, oh, really? They're this blah, blah. And then I saw them, they put something like, oh, well, I'm hearing talks that it's been canceled. And I'm like, no, it's off the card. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe I could have pulled more diva mode. I'm like, where's my credit, y'all? You saw me.
That was pretty funny. So if you were watching the live stream of the official weigh-ins, Cole Coffey was actually the first one to chime in.
That's right.
Our videographer, breaking news, damn it.
Where's my award on the wall, damn it? You know, but that's the kind of thing. You know, I guess we're lucky enough that, like you said, we've been doing this a long time. We have relationships. You know, you find things out. But, again, you're never quite sure. But once I got word, I was like, all right, it's sure. Yeah. But I'm not going to be like, go to the front of the room. Everybody, please listen to what I have to say, because you never fucking know even then, too, you know, because shit could change, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've been wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll say that, you know, and say, oh, well, I'm pretty sure this is happening. Book a trip to a country thinking the event's going to happen. And then, lo and behold, hey, it's not happening. So, hey, I have a vacation coming up.
You have a vacation coming up for a trip that didn't happen.
That
very
didn't
well. Dates that change,
you know. So, you know, I'm not in this to be the guy that's like, oh, look at me. Listen, I'm the guy that's breaking the news. You got to pay attention to me. I don't really care about that, you know. So, if anything else, though, it was nice to once be, the guy in the room that was like, oh, yeah, by the way, guys, yeah, this is not happening.
All right, let's talk about Sidney Calvillo. They said – Buffer said Calvillo, but if she's Mexican and speaks Spanish, her name is Calvillo. She has two L's.
I'm pretty sure it was Calvillo.
We didn't hear the broadcast. We can't hear the broadcast, obviously. So.
I know the other guys were saying Calvillo, but I thought he said Calvillo.
Oh, maybe – when I heard it, I thought he said Calvillo.
I think he said Calvillo just the way –
Sometimes
maybe
the inflections because the way he talks, like it's kind of hard.
Yeah, I think it sounded pretty clear enough in the thing, but I could be wrong because – you know, there was other shit going on in the room at the same time. But I remember thinking it because I was paying attention because I'd almost misspelled the name, or I was looking at the thing. I was reading it as Cavio.
Right.
But when I looked down the sound card or the fight card, I saw the other L. So I was thinking about her name. And then so I paid attention to what he said. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So.
Well, how about her coming in and picking up a first-round submission win? Girl's been fighting pro for a year.
Yeah.
And she's in the UFC. Picking up a win on a pay-per-view main card. At T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Holy Christ.
Pretty impressive. I mean, she was slick. The moves that she was
Dude, that transition.
That it was pretty sick.
To the back from the front. I mean, where she basically just folded her body in half and slipped over.
Slipped over and then was able to hook her legs underneath. I was
Oh my God.
Like, did you practice that? Or are you just that good?
And listen – you know, people were asking about this fight coming into it, and I'm like, listen, I'll be straight up honest with you. I haven't seen enough of Calvillo to really
know.
I didn't know anything.
Besides the fact of the team she's coming from.
Of course.
You know these guys are
and they were high
super
on
high
her.
Level, and
they
were
high
on
her.
But they're high on everybody of their team.
Yeah.
I mean, these
when
guys.
When was the last time Buchholz was like, yeah, this guy kind of
this
sucks.
Guy on my team, he's like, no, you don't really need to pay attention to him. I mean, these guys are the epitome of cheerleaders for their team.
They are.
So sometimes it's easy to kind of let that get caught up in the noise, but there was extra talk about Cynthia that she's something to pay attention to, and sure enough, after seeing that, it's like, wow, people are definitely gonna remember for that.
It was interesting because I thought Amanda, you know, her striking looked
Amanda
good
Bob
early
Cooper.
On. Yeah, she looked good. I thought, you know, I was like, oh, this is not gonna be good for Cynthia. To be honest with you, I just thought Cynthia would get caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
It's a pay-per-view main card a year
into your
career.
Did you see her coming out looking like a stud?
Yeah.
She was dancing. She looked so at ease. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, I'm just amazed, you know, making your UFC debut and you look calm and cool as ice like you've been doing this for the past 5 years, you know, amazing.
Amazing. So somebody to pay attention to, you know, not ready to proclaim her the next title contender, but, dude, when you think about what she was up against and, you know, being promoted from the Fight Pass prelims to the main card because of all the changes and T-Mobile and Las Vegas and that's your UFC, oh, my God, just crazy. Mad props there. And then opening up the main card, Alistair Overeem did pick up a knockout win over Mark Hunt. Interesting fight. Man, you know, Mark Hunt had that busted up leg early on, which is crazy.
Nuts.
Comes out later, he says he suffered a broken bone. I don't know if it was in that first round, but certainly wouldn't be shocked when you start seeing blood running out of your leg. You think something is probably not going well right there. But, dude, Alistair Overeem, man, the knees that he has into – flatten Mark Hunt like that, just incredible. And man, Alistair Overeem, he said it. He said, "Listen, I'm not done. You know, we got things to do." And he says, "You know, people have been writing him off, and he's right. You know, I don't think I wrote him off, but I picked Hunt going into this fight. I thought, you know what, man, I feel like Alistair's his chin is starting to you know to weaken a little bit, and I feel like you know he's just doesn't have what he did have. And Mark Hunt only has to land once, and I really thought again." Mark would feel like he had something to prove. Now, I will say on Media Day when Mark was like, I'm here because I was forced to, I did think, well, I probably need to change this pick. You know, I probably need to change this pick.
I still kind of picked him as well, but, man, I'm just hoping and praying that nothing comes back from any post-fight tests, you know, on Alistair. I'm not trying to suggest that there
– No accusations.
No accusations.
Just saying.
But just for the fact
that – How crabby would that be?
How shitty would that be? I mean – The fact that, I mean, and we talked about it before, I think there was just so much extra shit weighing on Mark this fight. Not that he would take it and let it distract him. I thought he looked really, really good. Some of the elbows and stuff that he was delivering was just phenomenal. But, man, get right in there. And he, I don't know if it was that just initial thing that broke his tibia, you know, but just the blood that he was seeing. I don't know if that got into his head and could distract him. But just the way for the UFC, how they dropped that response to the lawsuit on Fight Week. All this other stuff, and then it felt like they were trying to promote this like a co-main event, but didn't put it as the co-main event. And I was hearing talks in the back of part of it was because if it was a co-main event, they'd have to pay differently, so there was advertising and sign out front kind of advertising that fight, but it was still only the opener to the main card. So it still was like there was some weird, shady shit happening between the promotion and him. And then he's got to go in there and face this beast like Alistair. So, like I said at the beginning, I'm not accusing anything. Alistair just looked really, really good. But I would feel so bad for Mark should something come again. Because then it just, if anything else, puts more fuel to the fire. But, man, I did pick him. I thought he was going to go in extra focus almost to kind of one-up the UFC and be like, all right, you're going to try to drop this response to the lawsuit. You're going to try to do this. You're going to put me on the fucking first fight of the main card instead of a co-main event spot. I'm going to knock your boy out. And I was wrong.
I agree. I kind of thought about it all very much the same way. And I like where Alistair's head is at, though. And come to find out,
he's fighting good.
Come to find out, he was sick.
Yeah.
He was very sick. He was battling food poisoning. I heard a lot of people talking about this. I think there's some confusion about the whole IV bag thing. And assuming that if he was that sick, he probably got some IV bags. But you can get all that approved. Everything can be approved. You just have to be working in conjunction. The whole thing is you have to be working with USADA and the commission as it's happening, not afterwards.
You have to keep them in the loop.
Keep them in the loop. Talk about it. And they can get everything filed. Yeah. If you're puking and you need liquids, they're going to administer you liquids, and you have to. So you can get all that done. You just can't go do it and then after the fact go, oh, by the way, here's what happened. Can you help me out? As we saw with Cyborg, although, it worked out okay for her, I guess. Yeah. But that's what you're supposed to do. So you can definitely do that. And, dude, how about Alistair? You know, I like what he's saying. Listen, if Stipe wins, I get it. I'm not in on that. If JDS wins, maybe me and JDS go at it. Or if not, saying he wants to fight Francis Ngannou. Yeah. Now, Dana White says, hey, we got something for Francis. Yeah. That's not going to happen. But, dude, Alistair to be like, I'll take that guy?
For anybody, I told you after the fact, I know you said that during the broadcast they went and did a shot of Francis.
Yeah.
But in the post-fight presser, there's no reason for him to be around, but he actually came to the post-fight presser and was hanging out in the tent back in one of the media seats listening to Alistair and Dana talk. So I thought that was unique. I don't know if he was just like, I want to hear what these motherfuckers have to say. Or he's just like, hey, you know, if he calls me out, I'm ready to hop up there and do a little talking too, you know.
I would love to see it. It sounds like they got something else for Francis. I don't know if maybe it's that Kane fight that he's been
wanting.
Makes
sense. I mean, he's asking for it. Ask for it.
Keep saying that name out there. It might happen. But I like it, man. I really do. Something I wanted to touch on too that you made me think about when you talk about pay. I heard a lot of people kind of dogging the UFC because Tony Ferguson was offered less money to face Michael Johnson, basically.
Yeah.
And I heard a lot of people say, well, that's garbage. But that's all contractual. And I don't think people necessarily realize that. Those contracts get kickers in them. You know, when he was scheduled to make $250 and $250, Tony Ferguson still made $250,000 without fighting.
So yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you get kicks
did
up.
He still get stuff about – did he still get pay-per-view points? Is that why he was trying? But why do you think he was like, buy this pay-per-view at the weigh-in? Why do you think he was so adamant? Do you think he was just that high on the card?
I don't think he would have gotten. I don't think you get points off of.
I wonder if he thought he was. I wonder if he thought he like he was still in his contract. Regardless.
I'm sure it's something that you at least go back and be like, look what we sold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Look what we sold. So I'm sure.
Yeah, because at that point, people have already ordered it.
Yeah. So, So anyway, the reason he got offered less is because if in non-title fights, he was still contracted to make less. Yeah. You get a big, huge raise, a kicker, when you get up to the championship level. Yeah. So I saw a lot of people saying that the UFC was being shady. And I guess the UFC could have been like, hey, we'll still pay you your $250 and $250. But technically, that's just everybody honoring the terms of the contract.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
And I think from the UFC's perspective, I mean, no offense to Michael Johnson, but I think you'd probably say as far as pay-per-view buys go that Ferguson versus Johnson fight is going to sell less pay-per-views than a Ferguson versus Nurmagomedov fight.
I mean, I think anybody would say that's probably true. I mean, Habib and the people that we've seen come out for him and the support behind him, easily you're going to have more people. Granted, if it's a lot of Russians, they're probably stealing the fight anyways on the internet. I'm just going to throw that out there. I mean, if they're not too busy shutting down our Amazon and crippling our websites and breaking into the Democratic Party's stuff.
Hot political opinions.
I'm just saying now as our site gets knocked down later on this evening from all the Russian hackers that, of course, listen to this show.
Can't wait till they announce the Moscow event. You're not going to be able to go. Your visa doesn't get approved.
Right? But, I mean, he has a huge fan base, you know, and as much as I like Michael Johnson – he's not going to sell as well as,
right,
as Khabib's fan base.
Oh, Khabib's the man. The numbers we saw all week long.
Unreal.
On the website, YouTube, everything. Just,
he's been the biggest force. I mean, Tony did really well too, but uh-huh, it was always because he was referencing
Khabib. Yep. All right, the prelims. Marcin Tybura picked up a TKO win over Luis Henrique. Mark Godbeer also picked up a decision win over Daniel Spitz. Just kind of grouping these together because they just weren't high-level heavyweight fights. Yeah. They weren't. I will say with Tybura, thank you. Thank you. As the Baileys and coffees are being distributed this morning,
mm-hmm,
here,
mm-hmm.
I like the service here in the Casa de Café.
That's how we do it. Even though these are nice warm coffees with it, nice little. It's a little bit. It was a little bit easier to kind of stomach this than trying to switch up. And as much as I love the PBR at whatever time in the morning when we first got together,
yep,
was not sounding so good. I haven't even eaten breakfast yet. I did happen to shower and I have clothes on. So I did that as much.
Well, sir, I assure you, if I ever show up at the Casa de Cold Coffee and you are naked, we will not be taping a podcast. I will be leaving. So thank you for donning clothes.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
So Tybura, I think, deserves some credit, man. I mean, because it was a back-and-forth fight with Luis. And, you know, he did show some quality character after that. But, dude, it was just such a – I don't want to say a letdown, but it was a change in pace after we had just seen Alcantara and Elkins pick up their incredible wins. And in the Godbeer and Spitz fight, Spitz came in as a late replacement, of course. You know, Godbeer was able to battle. Spitz did show a chin. I'll say that, man. He was exhausted.
Yeah.
He wasn't, you know, you could tell the fatigue was getting to him, but he was taking some huge shots from Godbeer and was battling through him. So, I mean, he showed some heart, but to be honest, these were just two, you know, rather forgettable fights. The two most forgettable fights on the card, no doubt about it. The fight past prelims, Tyson Pedro, MMA junkie, roadshow favorite, Tyson Pedro with the greatest walkout music.
True, but we are big fans of Paul Craig as well. So I don't want to say like, oh, he's our favorite out of the two.
No, we love Paul Craig. We hated the fact that they got matched up.
We did not want to watch. Yeah, this was the fight that we were like, shit.
Yeah.
We like both guys. You know, they've both been really great, but – yeah, super, super happy for Tyson. Great, great fight. But, yeah, man, every time you hear that song, you get jacked up.
Too.
Sexual. I was petitioning in the back. I was like, bro, you got to keep the song. You're winning. You got to keep the song.
He had a great story. The fact that – because, you know, they played the song in Australia. Well, the first time he walked out, he walked into it, and I was like, first of all, this song is just making me want to dance right now.
It's ridiculous. It's just so catchy.
But Tyson's, like, dancing as he's walking out, making his UFC debut, and he's, you know – doing a little shoulder shimmy and having a good time and
smiling.
This
whole corner team, this time, we're really getting into it. Like, they're singing it and bopping, like, as he's, like, getting ready to give hugs and all that shit. I was like, oh, my God, look at these guys.
And it's funny. I mean, not like we're, like, huge, like, hey, we're just music aficionados. But when you hear a song that's catchy and then the guy is, like, dancing to it as he's walking to the cage, if it was just him walking stone-faced and there was a catchy song, it wouldn't work. You know what I mean? You're
especially
like, okay,
if it's a song that's, like – called like sexual.
Yeah.
I mean, then it's kind of weird.
You gotta love it. So listen, he picked up the big win. Looked fantastic. Overpowered Paul Craig. Just took him to the ground and grinded him out right there. And we had some post fight audio with Tyson, but through no fault of our own, it was one of the few times we've had some corrupted files, and we didn't get to play that. So we figured, you know what, we got to make it up, right?
Oh, you're talking about earlier in the week, not post-fight, but
– yeah, or pre-fight, I should say.
Pre-fight, yeah, pre-fight when we were at the – and we talked about this, mm-hmm, but when we were at the – what was it, media day, mm-hmm, we had the – it's only happened 3 or 4 times where I've had a file corrupt.
Ever.
You know, so we were super bummed, but here we get to rectify that situation with post-fight audio.
That's it. So we feel bad for our man Paul Craig. We still love talking to him, and but Tyson
he's gonna
Pedro
do well.
Good.
He's gonna do well, man. He's just – his size, that's why I think I was so surprised that Tyson was able to just kind of control him up against the cage and do what he needed to do. I just kind of manhandled him. You know, I think Paul was so many times, instead of trying to go for the underhook, he had that sort of arm over the neck, almost like he wanted to do like a judo toss or some sort of a hip toss to get him down, but it just wasn't working. Tyson's just strong.
Big dude. Got to think he's a candidate for that Auckland card as well, man. I certainly would love to see him fight
Which I broke for. No, I didn't. I almost broke.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Tyson Pedro, including the backstory of his walkout song and how it almost didn't get used again. And you can hear Cold Coffee chime in saying, damn it, you better use it again.
Y'all ready for this?
I don't think we'll be ready.
Enjoy it.
Okay. You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tyson, talk about that tonight. That was a sensational win. You got to be on cloud nine.
Yeah, appreciate it. Nothing that I didn't expect. I came in here, I was going to finish in the, told everyone that I was going to finish in the first round. That's what I came in to do, put on a show. A couple of things I saw that I could have used earlier, but still just waited for it and let it come instead of trying to push for it.
Was there a strength differential? Well, like when you had that cross face on there, he was just really unable to deal.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I actually cut a bit more weight for this fight, so I'm a little bit heavier, not anything crazy, but I felt a lot stronger. He went to go down to the ground and was just able to push him back up. I think he was a little bit surprised as well, but I know I'm strong there, and even on top, I think a lot of people think I'm tall and skinny, so underestimate when I'm on top, I'm pretty heavy. So.
Someone online had said, I don't know if it's true, did he actually tap with one of his other hands? Is that why they stopped it?
Oh, really? I'm not sure. I was tapping his face with my elbow, so that was all I was doing.
I had seen a statement that said you had heard that he underestimated you ahead of a fight and didn't think you were in the same class as him. Did that kind of put a bit more excitement into you going into this one?
Yeah, a little bit. I think that's why I was having so much fun with it, because he was underestimating me. I knew that he'd been asking for a top 15 opponent, and he said that I didn't deserve to be in there. My record is I'm still in my infancy, and as it shows in my record, but I've been doing this for a long time, so everyone else is still surprised at my skill level, but I know where I'm at, so I'll just keep doing it slowly and getting it done, and hopefully people will start recognizing.
Have you had your eyes on any particular top 15 opponent?
No, either? Not at all. I've never looked past the fighter. I'm never going to come in and underestimate anyone. He was a jiu-jitsu fighter. I came in expecting him to be the craziest boxer ever, because you never know. So I knew he was looking for that knockout, and I was surprised when he went for the takedown. So it was nice that he actually stood up with me.
Does it feel like this was a statement point
for your career? Nah, I try not to look at anything. Everything's a statement. If you're going to win in the UFC, I think people underestimate it, stepping into that octagon on the biggest stage in the world. So every win's, I take it as it is.
Are you looking for like a name opponent, or like someone who, if you beat them, it would demonstrate your skill level?
Anyone.
Yeah. What about like a Misha Cirkunov fight? Is that interesting?
I want to say I know who that is, but I'm... yeah, nah, I'm pretty bad. Honestly, I don't even watch many fights. My coaching staff takes care of all of that. Most of the opponents when I came in didn't even know who Paul Craig was when I fought him. I watched 30 seconds of him, and my coaching staff told me what they think might work, and I just go in there and do that. So hopefully I'll start watching a bit more tape on my fighters, just so I know a little bit more of what to expect. But like I said, with Paul Craig, he's supposed to be a ground fighter and just jiu-jitsu, and he ended up standing... with me, so that's what I expect. You never know what you're going to get in a fight, and it is that, just a fight.
Are you a fan of the sport, or do you just like it?
I'm not a fan. I just love martial arts. I've been getting punched in my face since I was a little kid, so it's just what I love to do. When kids were kicking the football in the backyard, me and my brothers and sisters were choking each other out. So
you had told me that you wanted to help put Australia on the map and to get a lot of people back home excited about MMA. Do you think that this performance is one that'll help to do that back home?
Yeah, I think so. I've always looked up to pioneers of the sport from Australia, but when I come over here and I watch, when you go down to a bar or anything to watch the UFC, it's pretty amazing to see how many people actually follow the sport. In Australia, it still hasn't been really big, but hopefully when the crowd starts to get me, either the Pacific Islanders and Australia, I've got the both sides of my family. Hopefully, once everyone gets behind me, win or lose, it makes a big difference. I've got a lot of support already, but I'm just enjoying it.
Near the end of the fight, when you got on top of him, did you feel his spirit just go away from him?
Yeah, a little bit. I was surprised. I think I had him on the back, and I was holding him, and he sort of just rolled over, and I was still very wary, because I know my coach and stuff told me that he likes to pull guard and play from the bottom, so I was still trying to stay heavy, but there was one moment when I had the crucifix, I heard him go and give a big bridge and then just let go, and I thought that was a little bit of the time, so I stopped going from heavy elbows just to light ones, just pitter-pattering his face.
What is it like to be on the same card as the Super Sumo and Mark Hunt? Is this a big deal for you?
Yeah, it's crazy. Having Australians and another Samoan on there, just the support and everything, it's been pretty amazing. I have the same manager as Mark. I only met him a couple times this time again, but Man, it's crazy because we have such a small nation, but to have that, even in NFL, you see that, like, per capita, we have so many elite athletes, and I really think once we move across to MMA, we're a lot in rugby league and rugby union, but once they get that skill set and the knowledge, I think we're going to be a dominant force.
Can you explain some of your tattoos, especially the ones in your lower back? Are those traditional?
Yeah, I actually got it done with my dad. It's probably one of the worst experiences I've had in my life. But it's amazing having the first one in the octagon and to just represent. It's awesome.
How about this one on your arm with the Pedro and it looks like a wolf?
So the top, they're all my cousin. That's the same as the hat I wear. Actually, I haven't explained that story. In the UFC, my cousin was killed in Afghanistan in 2010. Was in the American military. His mum, who's here tonight, sent me this hat, and I've worn it to every fight. So I've got him tattooed on me as well. So that's what the deal with the hat is.
Did you have to ask for permission to wear it?
Yeah, I did. I had to get it approved. So.
And they obviously said yes. Yep. Was it a tough thing to get approved?
No, not really. They were pretty helpful with it. I was a bit worried that I wasn't going to get to wear it, but I was really happy once I explained what it was. So they were very helpful.
Did he wear that hat?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's got the jump wings on it too.
Yep.
You're still only six fights deep in your career, right? How active are you trying to be in 2017?
I want to try and get another two in at least. I've made the jump up to UFC, and now I've got two fights in it. That's all I want to do is just keep getting more and more. So I'm excited what it has to offer. I think I'll probably be heading back over to Jackson Wink again. And it was awesome having Coach Wink, my dad, and Sully from Australia. So we've got a good team happening.
You're ready for the top 15?
I have no idea. Every time I've been underestimated with my ability, so you won't find out until you step in there with someone, but I'm excited to. I've got my brother-in-law here as well, who's just signed with the UFC, Taito Ibasa. He's a heavyweight, and that's what I want to do. I want to be on the same card with him. I think that'll be sick, so can't wait.
There's a fight. Should there be a fight that opens up in Auckland later on this year? Is that a fight card that you're going to try to push for?
Yeah, I've heard they've been throwing it around. June would be a perfect time for me. There's another one in Singapore, so any time around there, I'm looking forward to it, ready to stay active and keep going.
And there's a very well-known light heavyweight that trains at Jackson's. Guy John Jones. Did you ever cross paths with him? I think he's from that area.
Yeah, I saw him in there a couple times. I didn't get to train with him. I hope I do in the future. They're very good with putting the people in there and making you a better athlete, and I hope so. He seems like a really good guy, and I didn't get to see him too often, but I heard he has a fight coming up mid-year, so it'll be awesome to be around that time as well.
Can we put in a petition to keep the walkout song?
I'm not sure. I didn't even know if the crowd really enjoyed it. I heard just before I walked out, my manager came in and told me, he goes, "Do you know the song hasn't been released in America?" I was like, "Oh man, I'm going to walk out there. Everyone's just going to be quiet." I go, why are they playing Sexual?
what was your walkout song?
Sexual by Naked. Right. So I walked into the UFC office and I was like, let me ask you a question. Has anyone heard this song before I played it? No one had any idea. So I was a bit worried about that one. I was only going to play it just to show the Americans and then hopefully move on to a new song. But I know people seem to be enjoying it, and I like how much it lifts me up. It's not an angry song, and I like being happy. So.
And you're winning.
Yeah, that's true.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right, Tyson Pedro. So hopefully we'll see him in Auckland. Hopefully we'll get to jam that one more time. I'm not going to lie. Nobby from the UFC PR busted me kind of dancing a little bit on press row as he was walking in. So it's just some catchy shit. First fight of the night, Albert Morales showed a lot of heart, a lot of character. This kid's got some attitude and some spunk in there, and that was a fun fight. Picked up the split decision win. Hard fought. Had some cardio issues along the way, but turned things around in the third round and picked up the win to start off the night. It was a fun way to start the night. Now, Cole Coffey, back there in the back, we didn't really have a ton of guest fighters or anything like that, but you guys did see Invicta FC interim featherweight champion Megan Anderson.
Yes.
Oddly enough. Appearing at a UFC event, even though she insists she's not signed by the UFC.
Yeah, said she had nothing planned, wasn't meeting with the brass, but was brought in the night before.
Randomly and found her way into the press room?
Yeah, just randomly with random. I don't think he's an exec. I don't know what his role is. Ant.
Ant? Well, he's not exec, but he's a.
I don't know what what his role is. But he actually was kind of filling in as like a quasi PR person. Well, he was around, so they were bring he was bringing in some other stuff. He brought in early, I'm sure we'll talk about. He brought in Big Nog. They were talking about a show that they're now going to be having on Fight Pass called Third Degree, and it has Nog. It started with Keira Gracie.
Yeah, Keira Gracie, and then I think what happened was I believe Keira got pregnant.
Pregnancy and some other things. So they kind of were like, oh, we want to keep it kind of going. I think she was willing to kind of step away or whatever, or it just kind of stopped. So they you know, started using Big Nog. So that's coming forward, and we might say something eventually on the site. But the fact that Megan was there, she looked great, as you can imagine. But it was just oddly enough that, okay, why are you here? You know, you're not here supposedly to meet with the UFC brass, but now they're bringing you to the UFC press room to meet with people.
She's like, I just wanted to come watch the fights, and I was walking to the bathroom, and I accidentally came in here.
Accidentally found my way.
And as long as we're here in front of the cameras, can we just talk a little bit?
So I'm thinking this is another one of those ones where it's kind of like the Kelvin Gastelum, where there's shit in the works, but they just don't want to say it yet.
Well, I will say this. If Ant brought her back there, Ant is heavily involved with Fight Pass.
Yes.
And obviously, because he was pimping the Nog thing.
Yeah.
So maybe he figured this is a good way, because obviously Invicta, of course, is a Fight Pass product. So maybe,
oddly enough, but he never said anything like, hey, you can catch this, watch more Invicta on Fight Pass. There was no setup. It was just, hey, guys, Megan Anderson. And I'm just like, well, this is odd. What's she here for? Like, are we seeing something? Are we seeing a new signee to the only two-person division?
That's interesting. Yeah, it does. I mean, so, you got to think she's coming pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of they don't want to say anything because, I mean, Invicta has a pretty much open policy where if a contract comes from the UFC, they're not gonna deny her moving over. So there's not gonna be. I think she still does have fights contracted with Invicta. So something would have to happen there.
Right.
But if they're bringing there, I think it's just a matter of they have something in the works. They just not, you know, especially going back to Auckland. I think that's in that general neck of the woods.
Uh-huh.
I'm not the best with geography, but that's pretty darn close. Mm-hmm. I think something's in there, or it's just a matter of here's another star that came in. And the thing with her is she was talking about Cyborg, you know, great, you know, I think that'd be I'd love to see that match. I think it's a match that's eventually it's going to happen.
I do.
But I think also too, here's a division that has a lot of questions. We need talent. They need people in that division. So the fact that she's around just leads me to think that there are conversations happening, but they're just not ready to say as such.
Interesting. All right. Well, listen. So had that, as you said, Big Nog came back to talk about the Third Degree, a new show that's on
what
USA Fight Pass as well.
Great ambassador.
I had a chance to see a couple of these episodes. They're actually pretty good, man.
Yeah.
They're actually really good.
I think that's a perfect role for him. I mean, he's the guy. I mean, you want a legend. You want somebody that, and he even said like when he goes out and around, like the fighters are recognizing him. You need somebody that they're like, holy shit,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's Dog. You know, so what a great role for him. And we've said it before. This is a guy that, you know, some of these other fighters that they keep around do things for the UFC, but maybe not as heavily involved as some of the other ones.
Right.
Just like Forrest Griffin, Big Nog is hugely involved, and I think this is the perfect role for him to kind of act as an ambassador for the sport. Well-spoken, super nice dude, and I'm looking forward to the show. I haven't personally watched it, but I know those links are
supposed
to be coming
soon. I checked it out. It's good. It's worth checking out. If you have Fight Pass, I'm not saying get a subscription just so you can watch it.
Yeah.
But if you have it, definitely watch it when it comes out. Like, it's cool. Like, the one I saw, he went to Thailand and was, like, embedded in a Muay Thai camp and really showed,
so he's trying the different disciplines and stuff. That's what I think
he's training with them, but they're also, like, watching, you know, fighters there and tracking their careers and some cool stuff, man. It's shot really well.
Yeah.
It's obviously they spent some money doing it. It's some cool stuff, so it's definitely worth checking out. I will say
cool.
That. You know, I'm not saying, again, it's worth subscribing if you don't have it, but if you do, definitely check it out. So, all right, well, listen, Monday, I guess that's it for UFC 209, Elkins versus Bektic. Monday, I'm heading to Brazil. You, on Friday of next week, are going to London,
yeah.
So you'll beat us out to England. I think we overlap a little bit for like a day or so.
Which makes me think, I wonder if this week, and maybe we – we're so transparent ourselves.
Yep.
Maybe we have to tape early this week so we can get that done so that it's ready to go. Because I leave Friday morning.
I can send you all the audio on Thursday and you can just piece it together
real
quick, right? I'll have it laid out for you. Here we are. This is how our plans go, by the way.
Yeah.
This is as much planning as we do. it'll be me and, of course, Fernando Praches will be with us in Fortaleza, Brazil.
Oh, big roadshow favorite.
Big roadshow favorite. We'll have a couple of interviews to piece together. So, I mean, I'm sure I can just send you the audio and you can piece it together real quick. I won't take up too much of your time, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I know there's an hour difference. I want to make sure if we get it Thursday. If not, I have to do it Friday.
I'll be 5 hours ahead of you.
Yeah. But I know how you get with Fernanda. You guys start talking about peanut butter and Diet Cokes, and hours go by.
Ridiculous. This guy. How the hell have we done 101 and a half episodes?
We've done more than that, sir.
We have. All right, so we'll get that all planned. Then we'll be out again, and the next week we'll be out in London. We'll overlap for a day. We could do a day early there, but that would be on my birthday. But Abby will be there. Simon Head will actually I'm sure we'll grab him as well. He's going to be doing some work for us that week. That'll be fun in London as well.
That'll be fun.
And it will be my birthday, my 39th birthday. March 15th, I will be celebrating in London by doing 8 interviews at the Host Hotel that day.
That's a fun birthday.
That's how we live it up, son.
Woo!
All that is on the horizon. In the meantime, thanks for listening.